Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Road to Malheur, A Story of the American Fur Trade, by C.J. Adrian, narrated by Kyle Snyder. Chapter 1. Trouble in St. Louis. There I was, knee-deep in the mud, with a gun barrel shoved halfway down my throat. I was a dead man. Oregon country had not been kind to me. Not kind at all. They'd said the Indians would cause trouble. They were trouble enough. But it was one of my own who had turned his rifle on me. It was one of my own with his finger on the trigger. We were supposed to trailblaze and push out the Hudson's Bay Company so Americans could enter the fur trade. To that point, we had mainly turned on ourselves. In my final moments on this earth, I thought about how it had all gone wrong. With the taste of metallic bitterness in my mouth and cold steel pressed against my skin, memories flooded back, pulling me to the beginning of this ill-fated journey. I'd begun with the hopeful glimmer of a new start before the backbiting treacheries of Oregon country unraveled our mission. It was 1821, a time when my most pressing concern was the state of my polished boots. I disembarked at the bustling port of St. Louis, carrying the weight of my East Coast education and aspirations for a better life. The wild world awaited me, as did a man named Boyd. The port was a swirling dance of activity, teetering on the edge of two worlds, the civilized East and the untamed West. Everywhere I looked, its French roots were evident. Buildings with French colonial facades, adorned with ornate balconies and wrought iron railings, bordered the waterfront. The melodic tones of French mixed with English as men hollered orders and women negotiated over goods. Young children chased each other through the narrow alleys, their laughter echoing in a blend of both. The streets of St. Louis, cobblestoned and bustling with cart traffic, whispered of its storied past. Quaint inns and taverns, reminiscent of those I had read about in Paris, beckoned newcomers and old hands alike. The city held on to its European elegance while embracing the rugged spirit of the frontier. As I adjusted my bag and tried to shake off the journey, a shadow emerged from a nearby building. He was an older man with the sun-baked look of someone who had wrestled with nature and won more times than he'd lost. He reached out a hand to shake mine.
"Are you Christian de... there?"
he tried to pronounce. "De Bauge," I corrected him in my native French accent.
"I'm Boyd. Boy, you look like you've strolled right out of a Parisian academy. And you sound like it, too."
His voice dripped with amused skepticism. He was right. I was wearing a tailored suit with fine leather bags over my shoulder. This was my first day on the job, and I had been taught to dress for the occasion. Holding my head high, I responded, "I've traveled here from New York to seek opportunity." Boyd chuckled, then spat into the dirt.
"Opportunity? I've seen many young men like you. All dreams and no real understanding. Do you believe your education will shield you out there?"
Not wanting to seem daunted, I replied, "I've done my research, sir. I know the territories." His eyes narrowed as he stepped closer.
"That knowledge won't warm you in the mountains or deflect a Blackfoot arrow. I've been navigating these parts longer than you've been alive, and it's no place for a city gentleman."
"Thank you for your insight," I said, "but I plan to prove my mettle." The man smirked.
"Well, I've been sent to collect you and get you settled. Let's get this over with."
"Are you and I going to be traveling together?" I asked. He laughed and clapped me on the back.
"I hope not."
As he strode away, I took a deep breath, readying myself for the path ahead. I needed to orient myself and perhaps build some understanding with the hardened trapper, so I hurried to catch up. "Wait," I called out. "I have questions." Boyd turned, his eyes scrutinizing.
Figured as much.
Swallowing my pride, I gestured to the city around us. Tell me about St. Louis. It's different from what I envisioned.
St. Louis?
Boyd grinned.
It's a gateway, kid. Half the men you see here are dreamers like you, set on heading west. The other half? Well, they've tried and come back or found some other business here.
He gestured toward the distant outskirts of town.
The French laid its foundation. That's why you'll hear the lilt of their language in the markets. See their touch in the buildings. I'm not too keen on those Frenchies. Can't trust them as far as I can throw. But they're everywhere around here.
I shrugged off his comment about the French. And the frontier? How different is it from here? His face grew serious.
The frontier is a different beast altogether. Out there, it's wild and unpredictable. Nature doesn't care about your education or your fancy clothes. She'll challenge you again and again. And it ain't just nature. The tribes, the rival trappers, are all elements you'll have to reckon with.
Feeling a chill despite the warm day, I asked, What do I need to know to be successful? Boyd pondered my question for a moment.
First, shed any airs you got. Out there, humility and observance will serve you more than arrogance. Learn from those who've been doing it for years. Listen more than you speak. Second, respect the land and its people. You're more likely to receive respect in kind if you show respect. And last,
he added with a pointed look,
trust is a rare commodity. Be careful who you give it to.
Our conversation continued as we meandered through St. Louis, with Boyd pointing out places of interest and me soaking in as much knowledge as possible. There was a wellspring of wisdom beneath his rough exterior, and if I wanted to thrive out here, I'd do well to heed his words. Boyd led me onward, navigating the maze of streets until we arrived at a modest brick building. The sign above read, American Fur Company. Though the structure was unassuming, I could feel the pulse of ambition emanating from within. I stepped forward to show myself through the door, but Boyd put a hand on my chest to stop me.
Listen, kid, it's not too late. You can go back to New York and no one will think the lesser of you.
I beg your pardon, but I think you underestimate me. Boyd pushed harder against my chest.
I don't think you understand what I'm getting at, kid. Just one look at you, and I can tell you'll be food for crows before we even get to the first fort. The men who come out here, they've got nothing to lose. No homes to go back to. You could go back to New York and be a doctor or a lawyer. The frontier isn't for you.
His words gave me pause. He was right. I'd had more opportunities for a lucrative career in New York. Before setting out west, I had been a lawyer, and a good one. I think I belong here more than you know, I insisted. Boyd crossed his arms.
Tell me why.
I reached into the well of my memory, stirring the pain from which I was running, and said, If you must know, my wife and son died in childbirth, and the grief drove me to drink. I got into some trouble with the law, and Mr. Astor fished me out of jail and worked out a deal with the judge.
Oh.
Boyd's demeanor toward me shifted. He took off his hat and held it over his chest, a look of pity in his eyes.
I'm sorry for your loss.
We stood in silence for a moment, surrounded by a swirl of chatter and laughter from passerby, the thundering of carts over cobblestones, and the unsettling distant crack of gunfire.
Astor's a good man,
Boyd finally said.
He helped me out of jail, too. But a young man of your education and demeanor, I'm surprised he sent you out here to do the grunt work instead of keeping you at his office in New York.
Oh, believe me, it was not my first choice, I said through a chuckle. Mr. Astor insisted I venture out here to learn the trade before bringing me on at the corporate office. Something about, you need to know what's in the sausage to sell the sausage. He's given me the task of securing a trade deal with the Northwest Company so we can ship our furs back east from Oregon country. And there's a good-paying job waiting for me in New York, so long as I don't flub it up.
Okay, kid. I get it now. Come on, let's get you outfitted.
Boyd led the way inside. The office was spacious, with neat rows of desks, ledgers scattered about, and clerks busily at work. We were approached by a man who seemed out of place. He wore a suit, no doubt a mark of his position, but his hair was disheveled, sticking out at odd angles. It looked as though he'd been thrust into his role, rather than being naturally suited for it.
"Boyd," he said with a nod.
Then, eyeing me with curiosity and skepticism, he extended a hand.
"And you are?"
"Christian." I shook his hand firmly.
"I'm Randall. I handle the company's business here."
He guided us to a desk piled with paperwork.
"I assume you want the standard trapper contract?"
"Yes,"
Boyd cut in.
"And whatever else the company provides for beginners."
"Wait." I reached into my coat pocket to procure the letter signed by John Astor and handed it to Randall, who lifted a monocle to his eye to read it.
"You'll want to take this to your company leader," he said.
"What does it say?"
Boyd asked, his neck craned over my shoulder. Randall smirked, handing me a sheaf of papers.
"It's all quite standard. A contract for your service, and in exchange, you'll receive a trapper's kit and equipment essential for your journey."
Boyd sighed audibly as I skimmed through the documents, trying to make sense of the legal jargon.
"All this paperwork makes a man thirsty," he remarked.
I could feel his impatience. But looking at the list of equipment and provisions the company offered, I was keen to collect them.
"Actually, before that, I'd like to gather my kit."
Randall nodded, scribbling something onto a piece of paper and handing it to me.
"Take this to the trade post. They'll set you up with everything you need."
As we left the building, with the promise of a new venture palpable in the air, Boyd playfully punched my shoulder.
"Is it always business first with you? Let's get you sorted. Then we'll find that drink."
It irked me that he kept insisting on drinking after I'd confided in him my troubles back home. There was a disconnect with him, an aloofness married to urgency over finding that next drink. I knew it well, and I wanted to forget it. The streets of St. Louis were teeming with various characters, each with their dreams and aspirations, all searching for that elusive fortune. As Boyd and I made our way toward the depot, the midday sun cast shadows over the cobblestones, and a boisterous laugh cut through the air. Coming our way was a group of men led by a striking figure dressed head to toe in deerskin, his garments tailored to his muscular frame. Atop his head sat a sizable round hat adorned with a prominent feather that danced in the breeze. His rugged beard did nothing to hide the smirk on his lips, and his eyes sparkled with mischief.
"For crying out loud,"
Boyd muttered, wiping his face with a handkerchief.
"It's Fergus McBride. Do me a favor and don't pick a fight with him."
A raw, unfiltered disdain surged when I locked eyes with Fergus. There was a type of man I had learned to detest in my life, one of unchecked ego and bluster, and it was apparent that Fergus fit the bill. Conversely, my city attire and unfamiliarity with the frontier world seemed to brand me as everything he despised.
"Look here, lads!"
Fergus called out in a thick Scottish accent, his voice dripping with feigned surprise.
"A wee lost lamb in his Sunday best."
He motioned to me, causing his cronies to chuckle. One of the men added,
"Looks like he's wandered far from the church, eh?"
I felt a flush rise to my cheeks. I was out of my element, and they knew it. To them, I was just a city boy playing at being a trapper. I opened my mouth to retort, but Fergus beat me to it.
"Do they wear fancy clothes like that on the trails where you come from?"
he asked, his voice laced with mockery.
Another added,
"He'll be a beacon for all the wild creatures. Easy prey. Won't last a week."
Boyd, walking beside me, remained silent. His lack of defense was a clear message. I would need to stand up for myself in this world. Gathering my courage, I again met Fergus's gaze. "Every journey has its beginning," I said. "I might start in these clothes, but it doesn't mean I'll finish in them." Fergus laughed, a hearty sound that was infectious.
"You've got spirit. I'll give you that. Maybe there's hope for you yet."
He winked and, with a wave, moved on with his group, leaving me to contemplate the road ahead. Breaking his silence, Boyd said,
"You had better be careful with him. He's a killer."
On the outskirts of town, we arrived at a peculiar cabin. It was built with raw, uneven logs that stood out glaringly amidst the more modern brick and plaster structures we had passed. A roughly burnt sign overhead read, "Trade Post." Its blatant primitiveness seemed almost defiant. "That's an odd-looking building," I remarked. Boyd cast me a sideways glance.
"That's the idea."
Entering the cabin was like stepping into another world, one far removed from the academic halls of New York's law schools. The overpowering scent of hide, dried herbs, and other miscellaneous trade goods would make any newcomer's head spin. Tall shelves lined the walls, stacked meticulously with sordid furs, while thick strands of dried tobacco leaves swayed gently overhead, a testament to the trade that flowed through the outpost. Out of sheer curiosity, my fingers reached out to touch one of the tobacco bundles. The texture was stiffer than anticipated, and its resilience momentarily captivated me.
"Those are for smoking, not for your city hands,"
came a raspy voice dripping with condescension. My gaze shifted to the counter, where a scruffy man stood, his bloodshot eyes sizing me up with an almost predatory keenness. The backdrop of ancient muskets and knives, rusted with age and use, only added to his sinister aura. Boyd, seemingly unfazed by the man's demeanor, leaned in, their conversation barely above a whisper. My name punctuated their hushed tones multiple times, which only heightened my anxiety. But rather than stand idly by, I chose to busy myself by examining the wares on display. If I was to be a fur trapper, acquainting myself with the tools of the trade seemed a logical first step. The items were an eclectic mix, from beaver traps of varying sizes to specialized knives and tools I could scarcely identify. A rough hand clamped down on mine as I picked up a peculiar-looking instrument, perhaps a skinning tool.
"That ain't for the likes of you,"
the scruffy clerk growled, his face inches from mine. Taken aback by his sudden aggression, I retorted, "I was merely examining it. I've every intention to purchase my equipment here." His eyes flared with a mix of amusement and disdain.
"You think throwing coin about will make you fit for the frontier? You're in for a harsh lesson, city boy."
Everything stood still for a heartbeat. Here was my first real test. Would I bow to the bully or stand firm, establishing my place in this new world? Pushing back against the weight of his grip, I drew myself up, meeting his gaze evenly. "I suggest you release me. I'm here to trade, not to be manhandled." For a split second, I thought he would lunge at me. But Boyd intervened, his voice slicing through the mounting tension.
"Enough, Jeb. The kid's here with me. He's got coin and intent. So unless you've got an issue with either, I suggest we move on to business."
Jeb released my hand, his eyes never leaving mine. It was clear he did not think much of me. Still, in a show of diplomacy, he pulled out a bottle filled with a tantalizing amber liquid. After taking a prolonged swig, he offered it to me with a challenging glint.
I hesitated for a moment before grabbing the bottle and taking a swig. The liquid burned its way down, and I coughed a little, much to Jeb's delight. But I held onto the bottle a moment longer, locking eyes with him before passing it back. The rest of the transaction went relatively smoothly. Boyd conversed with Jeb about the necessary supplies, pointing to various items while I took mental notes. When all was said and done, Boyd threw the paper signed by Randall onto the counter. Jeb read the note and groaned.
They're giving this kid a 50-cal Pennsylvania? What a waste.
Still eyeing me, Jeb gathered my supplies on the counter and checked them against the list. As he did, his demeanor shifted from confrontational to something more calculating, a change that didn't escape my notice.
Your company doesn't cover all of this, he said. You still owe $15.
Don't pull this crap, Jeb. You and I both know the company covers the whole kit, Boyd said.
It's fine. I pulled Aster's letter from my pocket. I have this. Jeb scanned the letter, running his fingers over the wax seal. He let out a low snicker as he read. As he handed back the letter, he pushed my supplies across the counter.
Good luck, kid.
When we finally left the trading post, I was laden with the tools of my new trade, a rifle I scarcely knew how to use over my shoulder, and also with the weighty realization that my journey into the wild frontier would be fraught with challenges. Boyd, sensing my introspection, clapped a hand on my shoulder.
The frontier is a different beast, kid. It won't be like anything you've faced before. But remember this. It's not the wilderness or the animals you need to be wary of most. It's the men.
The sun was beginning to dip below the horizon, casting long shadows on the uneven cobblestone streets of St. Louis. The city's stone and wood structures turned golden in the dying light, their facades hinting at stories of a community carved out from the hinterlands. Boyd seemed restless as we wove through the streets, his gaze continually drifting to the taverns we passed, each filled with the lively hum of conversation, laughter, and the occasional drunken song.
Christian,
Boyd began, his voice noticeably softer.
I don't suppose we could, you know, make a quick stop. Just a small detour. I could use something to wet my throat.
I frowned, adjusting the strap of my satchel. Boyd, I'd like to get to our lodgings first, get settled in and perhaps have a proper meal. We can drink afterwards. Boyd looked at me with an expression that was hard to read, a mixture of frustration, desperation, and something deeper, something I couldn't quite put my finger on.
It's been a long day,
he finally said, his voice almost a whisper.
I need it. Just one drink to take the edge off, and then we can move on.
Despite my reservations, the rawness in Boyd's voice struck a chord. I realized that while I was out of my depth in this new world, so was he in his own way. Perhaps, for him, the tavern was more than just a place for a drink. It was a haven, a brief respite from his burdens. Fine, I sighed, my resistance waning. But just one drink, then you take me to my lodgings. A brief, relieved smile broke through Boyd's grim facade.
All right,
he murmured, guiding us toward the nearest tavern, its dim lights offering a warm invitation against the encroaching night. The dimly lit tavern was a cacophony of laughter, loud voices, and the occasional clinking of mugs. At first glance, it seemed like any other drinking establishment, but a closer look revealed the rough edges unique to the frontier. The patrons, burly trappers and traders, their rugged features illuminated by flickering candlelight, seemed to blend seamlessly with the wooden interior. As Boyd and I made our way to an empty table, I couldn't help but notice the subtle changes in his demeanor. Gone was the assertive man who had met me at the docks. In his place stood someone who seemed a tad out of sorts, restlessly glancing toward the counter where a line of bottles sat. It was clear Boyd found solace at the bottom of a glass. An escape, albeit temporary, from whatever demons haunted him.
"Drink? I'm buying," he said,
a hint of vulnerability peeking through his gruff exterior. Before I could answer, a familiar voice rang out.
"If it isn't the city boy and his chaperone!"
McBride, accompanied by his gang of rowdy trappers. He swaggered into the tavern, every step dripping with arrogance. By his side, a shorter man slithered, his blonde hair contrasting sharply with the dim surroundings, his beady eyes focused intently on our table. "Who's the man next to him?" I asked Boyd, concerned by the look he gave me.
"That's McBride's lapdog, Lucas McLean, not someone you want to cross."
Their approach was deliberate, like wolves circling their prey. And, once again, I found myself the center of their mockery. With startling speed, McLean lunged, snatching the satchels from my side.
"Let's see what the gentleman has brought with him from the big city,"
McLean jeered, flinging one satchel to a crony while rifling through the other. Laughter echoed as they played their cruel game of keep away, my belongings tossed about like playthings. Boyd's face grew tense, but he seemed rooted to the spot, his internal struggle evident. My patience, however, had evaporated. Lunging at McLean, I tried to reclaim what was mine. Surprise gave me the upper hand for a brief moment, and I managed to wrestle one satchel away. But the numbers were against me. McBride came at me with a wicked smirk on his face.
"Enough games!"
he bellowed, just before his fist connected squarely with my jaw. The force of the blow sent me sprawling, my vision blurring, the raucous laughter and jeers growing distant. As darkness threatened to consume me, the last thing I saw was Boyd's anguished face, a torrent of emotions crossing his features. Then, nothing but blackness. My eyes fluttered open to the sight of aged wooden beams above me, forming a tight A-frame. A dull pain throbbed at the back of my skull, every pulse reminding me of the brute force of McBride's blow. I groaned, trying to push myself up. But the room swayed, forcing me back onto a straw-filled mattress. I took a moment to absorb my surroundings. This wasn't the clean, cozy inn I had pictured. Instead, the shack was cluttered, filled with an array of items like those at the trading post. Fur pelts stacked in a corner, tools scattered about, and what looked like dried herbs hanging from the ceiling. The air was thick, laden with a sense of tobacco, hide, and something else less identifiable that tickled my senses, a combination of earth and decay. Boyd stood beside a rickety wooden table, watching me with a mixture of amusement and irritation. His silhouette was backlit by the thin rays of sunlight peeking through gaps in the wooden slats of the shack.
"Finally awake,"
he remarked dryly, sipping from a mug.
"You sure have a talent for trouble, city boy."
I winced and managed to find my voice.
"Where am I?" "Trapper house."
Boyd set down his mug and gestured around the shack.
"Had to drag you out of that tavern before things got even uglier. McBride and his lot had a field day with you. Lucky a couple of them felt bad and helped me gather your gear."
I swallowed hard, memories flooding back. The mocking laughter, the feel of my satchel being yanked from my grip, and the cold, brutal violence in McBride's eyes.
"Thank you," I murmured,
although some of me still bristled at the idea of being saved. Boyd snorted.
"Don't thank me yet. You've made things complicated."
He produced a piece of paper from the pocket of his worn coat, unfolded it, then held it out for me to see. I recognized it instantly as an official order from the company.
"You see this?"
His voice was laced with frustration.
"We leave tomorrow, and you got your wish. I'm going with you. There is no
Sample complete. Ready to continue?